The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
Welcome to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roe Diefendorf, your source for total wealth management. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on the show are solely those of Roe, his guests, and callers. Now let's begin the show. Here's your host, Roe Diefendorf.
Thank you for joining us again on Three-Dimensional Wealth. I'm your host, Roe Diefendorf. And today we're going to be talking about philanthropy, and philanthropy being more than giving. And to do that, I have two special guests who are very well qualified to talk about the topic at hand. One is from California, Renata Rafferty, and she is a nationally respected consultant, columnist, and author of The Business of Charity, and is also a noted philanthropic advisor working with high-net-worth individuals, families, and family foundations. Oh, now she's been interviewed on Inc., Kiplinger's, Worth, Money Magazine, On Wall Street, Forbes, as well as major dailies such as the Washington Post, the Boston Globe, the New York Times. She's been a frequent guest on the O'Reilly Factor and other cable news shows. And now she's on Business Voice America. Renata, we are glad to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Roe. I appreciate it.
And also on the East Coast. Now we've got Bob Thompson. And Bob is the principal consultant for Sage Financial Design, which is a registered investment advisory group in Simsbury, Connecticut.
Right.
And they provide multifamily office services, legal, accounting, and financial services to high net worth individuals. And Bob has got a great background. He's been a frequent speaker for financial and charitable organizations around the country. He serves on the board of directors of the Financial Planning Association in the Connecticut Valley. He's a member of the National Committee on Planned Giving. And he is also on the board of directors of the International Association of Advisors in Philanthropy. And he holds a BA degree in political science and a Juris Doctorate from Ohio Northern University. So, Bob, we're glad to have you with us.
Thank you, Roy. Glad to be on.
Well, good. When we talk about philanthropy, one of the things I look back at and I say, well, when did it begin? You know, was it from the beginning? You know, you look at the Bible, it says in the beginning, you know, how far back did philanthropy start? Is it a principle that it was right from the beginning of time? And any comments from either of you? I'd like to hear your perspective.
Bob, would you like to start?
Yeah, that's a good one, and that is a good place to start. Where did all this happen? Roe and Renata, I had as a recent guest on our TV show, a local cable TV program, a rabbi here, and we talked about that as it relates to just how do we get this thing called charitable giving or philanthropy or whatever. And from the Judeo side, we would look at it in the text of tzedakah. And tzedakah is an obligation, if you will, mm-hmm. of the Jewish family. And on the Christian side, it's more of benevolence and giving to the needy. And the distinction there is very fine, but one is almost you're not a whole person or a full person or experiencing a fulfilled life unless you do tzedakah. And on the Christian side, it's very similar, but it's giving to the needy, and it's an outright charity, if you will. Fine distinction, but it's not just hundreds of years, but thousands of years.
Hmm. Terrific insight. Renata, any comments on there? Or maybe
Bob is right on the money, and it is in our nature as humans to want to help and want to give. In terms of organized philanthropy, we're probably talking about the last several hundred years. That's where associations of people come together with the specific intention of helping some other group of people
in
who are very
country,
focused
in this country,
and financial effort.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, each of you have very, I think, different practices, although majoring on philanthropy. I know, Bob, you've got your registered investment advisory firm, But Renata, your practice is a little different because you're not really a financial advisor, are you?
Exactly. We're generally brought in. We're a group of philanthropic advisors who come in once the financial planner and or whether it's an estate planning attorney or a financial planner or some other professional, once they've recommended to an individual or family to set up some charitable instruments as part of their financial plan, we're usually brought in to then help the individual or the family decide, well, what kind of charities do you want to give to? What kind of change do you want to make in the world? So we pick it up at the point where the financial planner leaves off in helping a family identify what their philanthropic passions and vision are, what their risk tolerance is, what level of investment they want to make. We help them find the charities that they're going to invest in, and we help them perform the due diligence on the charity.
Hmm. Now, Bob, what do you do on your side that's different or similar?
Well, ironically, more similar than a lot of planners, Roey. Renata is very insightful, and I hold her on a high pedestal in her philosophy and her experience in dealing that area because she's dealt with the development people with nonprofits, and she sees the pluses and minuses there, and really has been a pioneer in working on the consulting side of what we call donor-centric. So she picks up the ball after many professional advisors and works with the donor and works with the donor's family. Our practice has kind of evolved mainly because we've been in this business for 25 or 30 years, and it parallels to a high degree of what Renata is saying. She has that experience in dealing with high net worth families and family retreats and working with multiple generations and that kind of thing, and we kind of parallel that too, Rory.
And to that extent, I have to say, and not just to blow kisses back at you, Bob, but your practice is also unique. There are not many financial planners, I would say, today in the country who are very familiar with, fluent with, or comfortable with the appropriate use of charitable instruments within their financial plans. And it's really rare to find someone like Bob and other members, for example, of Advisors in Philanthropy, which is an organization of planners who does have a particular knowledge of philanthropic instruments and also does have an appreciation for helping their clients identify what it is they'd like to accomplish in the world.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Bob, when do you bring in the discussion about philanthropy in the process?
Right.
You're doing really sort of, I guess, financial planning.
Yes. Yes.
And then the investment advisory work. But when does that come in the process?
Well, financial planning and investment advisory, that's our core business.
Okay.
And I almost interrupted you and said right at the beginning. I mean, when we talk to a potential client that's been referred to us from other clients, we talk about our strengths and our weaknesses, and some of our weaknesses, I guess, in the eyes of some people, Roey, is that we have certain bias that we've accumulated over the years, and one of those is that we talk about philanthropy, we promote philanthropy right up front, and one of my biases is that we will share with our client strategic techniques and strategies, whether it's tax savings or in wealth accumulation or what have you. But philanthropy is an integral part, a very, very important part of that process. And we introduce philanthropy as a part of that process at the very beginning.
Hmm. Well, as you know, you're on the show Three Dimensional Wealth. And so what we talk about is not just financial wealth as well, but personal wealth, your values, your beliefs, and how
right.
to preserve those and capture and perpetuate
right.
them, and also your social wealth, and so we get involved in philanthropy and philanthropic planning as well. And so, yeah, we're big believers in being able to put all that together and capture the totality of someone's wealth and help manage the totality of their wealth. And what we're finding is the impact that we are having on our clients is so significantly greater than when we just did financial planning.
Roe, you're absolutely right. One of the things that I have found in my practice over the last 18 years are the number of individuals, particularly high net worth individuals, who almost set aside what they see as a kitty for doing their charitable giving, and then their financial planner deals with all the rest of the assets. And it's bad financial planning and it's bad charitable giving not to kind of be looking at them at the same time and making your plans in a coordinated, cohesive fashion. So one of the things that I always encourage when I get clients coming to me is, who's your financial planner? Does your financial planner know you're talking to me? Let's talk to your financial planner. As I said, too often there's this side pot of money that they've put aside to do their charity with, and they see it as something outside of their overall financial picture.
How do the financial planners feel about you, Renata? I mean, do they put their guard up and say, oh, what's she doing?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Because we do not comment at all or make any suggestions with regard to the financial plan, we strictly, once the financial plan is developed, there is usually a charitable component. And we'll be talking about some of the more technical devices later. But my work is really to help them work with what is it you want to accomplish in making change in the world through a charity. So there's no stepping on toes. We work very well together, and most of my clients do come to me through planners.
Interesting. Now, are you doing that kind of work yourself, Bob, or do you have some up in your area there that does that?
Well, we do that.
Okay.
That's a large portion of our practice, and our focus is on that niche, if you will. The problem that I have, and I was going to ask Renata as she was speaking, but the problem that we have in the planning area, Roe, is that there aren't a lot of Roes out there, and I mean that as a sincere compliment. We need to replicate, if you will, the concepts in your three-dimensional wealth. We have a lot of attorneys that are gatekeepers,
mm-hmm.
that they're obstacles, they're hurdles in this process. We have accountants that are record keepers and not proactive, in our opinion, as they could be with the particular client who they do the tax return, they know the charitable contributions, but as Renata said, it's not tied together with their overall wealth. And they have the information, but they're just not probing and peeling the onion, as we like to say, into the client's head and heart.
Good. Bob, Renata, we're going to take a short break, but we'll be back to talk more about philanthropy. It's more than giving. So stay tuned for more of Three-Dimensional Wealth.
Business information you need. From the stock market to starting and managing your business. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
Financial planning can be confusing and complex, and unless you have a solid game plan, you could be taking unnecessary risks and missing out on tremendous opportunities. Let Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates take the mystery out of investing and help you build a solid financial foundation for years to come. Diefendorf Capital Planning revolves around the family, and through our financial service companies and three-dimensional wealth centers, we strive to deliver total wealth management financially, personally, and socially. Learn more about what Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates can do for you. Visit the website at diefendorfcapital.com today. Integrity, full service, best in class, diefendorfcapital.com.
If suddenly you're numb or weak on one side, limb, or face,
it could be a stroke. Get help. Don't wait.
Maybe it's a loved one suddenly slurring their speech or dizzy.
Call 911 and get medical help quickly.
Blacks have a higher occurrence. Do you want to know more?
Call 1-888-4-STROKE or visit www.strokeassociation.org. Time lost is brain lost.
A public service message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Why is Pepsi cooler than Coke? Why are iPods so popular? In 2005, how can you launch a successful brand? Want to know? Learn about the fascinating and intriguing world of graphic design and branding on Design Matters with Debbie Millman. Every Friday at 12 Pacific Standard Time, Debbie Millman will provide you with a provocative look into the stimulating world of design as it intersects with contemporary culture. Hear what the experts have to say about creating, maintaining, and launching a brand in today's challenging marketplace. Join us every Friday at 12 Pacific Standard Time for Design Matters with Debbie Millman, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
What I Want to Be When I Grow Up by Johnny Mike.
Dad, it's John. I got the promotion. We'll call him John Jr.
You'll speak over 500 million words in your lifetime, but none of them will be as important as the words you use to tell your six-year-old he has cancer. CureSearch.org connects you to the most comprehensive research and advice on childhood cancer and to other families who know exactly what you're going through. CureSearch.org. You're not as alone as you feel. Brought to you by CureSearch and the Ad Council.
The Bottom Line in Business Talk. Voice America Business.
Bringing you the keys to total wealth management, this is Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roe Diefendorf. Comments or questions? Visit www.diefendorfcapital.com or call 516-759-3900. Now back to the show. Here's Roe Diefendorf.
I'm here with Renata Rafferty and Bob Thompson, and we're discussing philanthropy this hour. And the question I want to throw out for the two experts is, you know, why do people work like dogs to accumulate and then give their assets away? I mean, what's going on here?
Are you talking about give it away to charity, or are you talking about giving it away, just blowing it?
Well,
because I think the blowing it has to do with the discomfort some people have with keeping money if they're not comfortable, if they're not used to it. Why do they give it to charity? Sounds like a good idea, and you get to go to a lot of good parties. I think a lot of people start there.
That could be. Anything, Bob, that you might have commented? Then I'm going to talk about the article that was just in the Wall Street Journal about Warren Buffett. Mm-hmm. But any comments that you see psychologically philanthropy?
Yeah, I think in some cases they're not aware of what's out there. They either think they have to be a multi-millionaire or billionaire to do things, or the process is too complex and costly, or they're just not aware of the strategies and techniques that other people take advantage of.
The other thing they're really not aware of is how many choices they have. They oftentimes focus, because it's all they know, on what I call the blue chip charities. United Way, Red Cross, American Heart Association, the things that we hear about all the time. But we have 900,000 registered charities in the United States and 500,000 churches. So someone can really hone in on what their personal passion or interest is in improving the community or the world, and finding they're certainly going to find a charity that will line up with that.
Roe, also another way to interpret your question there is that they give their assets away, and one form of doing that is in the form of taxes. So a concept called social capital, and it's referred to in a lot of different forms, but they're not aware that they can control what normally would be taxes in one form or another, whether it's a state or state taxes, capital gains tax or income tax or whatever, and that social capital is I can actually give that to my favorite charity.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me? Oh, we have a caller calling in. Okay, Bob? Can we hear you, Bob?
Yes, sure can. My name is Bob, and I'm in Bradenton, Florida.
Okay. Have a question for us or a comment?
Actually, a comment. You asked the question about why somebody would give their money away. Let me tell you a quick story. About 2 years ago, we started a ministry called Be His Witness. That's Be His Witness, three words. We're a Christian organization because we saw a need in the Dominican Republic and in South America, Peru, Ecuador, Guatemala, Honduras, and also in Africa for vitamins. And it seems like such a little niche, but yet since last October, we've shipped over 1 million vitamins, most of which are chewable vitamins for children. And the reward that people get in knowing that they make a difference in these lives is just tremendous, and what a great thing to do with your funds.
That's terrific. Now, Bob, did you have an advisor help you put this together? Or is this just a mission you went on yourself and put together?
Well, to start with, I started the 501c3 on my own, learned the hard way, formed a corporation and did all the work, and really still struggling in terms of how do you grow a brand new ministry to the level we'd like it to grow to when you don't have the credibility and the monstrous organizations of World Vision, Red Cross, and on and on. So that's where we're struggling. Our financial planning really needs to look into the future, and we need to involve more and more people. We're doing some of that communicating on our own. There's a foundation was set up, the Be His Witness Foundation. Some of my fraternity brothers have put together. So it's growing. It's just I'm so impatient because I see such a need, and I'm really interested in this topic and really appreciate the comments.
Wonderful. Renata, now, someone like Bob's foundation, Be His Witness, as you're researching for families or for foundations, you could find out about his organization. Is that what you're doing? And you're helping screen and come up with, I guess, your due diligence?
Much of the time, that's exactly right. Usually, individuals think that the only way to screen a charity or the best way is to look at their financials or their income tax return, which is the only document a charity is required to make public, the informational tax return, which is called a 990. And frankly, that's a very weak way to look into a charity. There are more critical questions such as the leadership. Are they people that you trust? Are they people of integrity? Are they people who keep their eye on the ball? How accountable, how transparent is the charity? Do they make it easy to know what they do, how they do it, and what they spend doing it? It's interesting because if you look at those two principles, that's exactly the basis on which Warren Buffett made his decision. He looked at the leadership. He said he trusts Bill and Melinda. He knows that whatever they do well, and they do it with integrity, and that it will have an effect. And he also knew that they are people who will watch the funds and be transparent about exactly what they're trying to accomplish and whether it's working.
And that's in spite of a foundation that Buffett has himself and his wife. They have two different foundations, and he looks to Gates, Bill and Melinda, running a very efficient, focused shop, if you will.
The Wall Street Journal says that philanthropy advisors believe his, and this is Buffett's, new philanthropic plan will become a model for how to donate money in order to get the maximum charitable impact. And they think this is going to be a big move towards helping wealthy people give big donations during their lifetime rather than waiting to do it as a bequest at death. What's your feeling? I mean, is this a momentum that's coming about?
I would not say that within the charitable sector that is the opinion. We've seen efforts like this before. We saw it with Ted Turner's gift of $1 billion to the UN and Walter Annenberg investing $500 million into education, and not much happened and not many people followed them. I think the giving aspect of this transaction is not what's going to revolutionize philanthropy. I think it's going to be the approach that the Gates Foundation takes in making massive infrastructural change affecting whether it's health, population, or whatever on a continental basis. As charities, we are not used to looking at, let's go tackle that huge problem and wipe it out. And for the first time, we have an entity that has the resources, the willingness, and the ability to assemble the know-how to actually make a run at it. I think that's what's going to be revolutionary. And if it works, or if we see it start to work, that's when we might see some more pooling of charitable funds between individuals of wealth and other foundations.
As you deal with your clients, do you find there's a point in time when they're giving that it goes from that point of obligation to the joy of giving, that all of a sudden the motivation changes, or that you see that sort of the light bulb has gone off? Do you find that?
The joy comes when they recognize that deciding who they want to give to and what they want to accomplish is such a personal and enjoyable experience. It's not about writing a check to a large charity whose name maybe you hear in the news a lot. it really is looking at what are the things that have been important to you and your family in your life. What are the neighborhoods? What are the cities? What are the countries where that have meant something in your life? Do you want to help at a very individual level, say by offering financial assistance through a scholarship fund for individual students to get through school? Or do you want to try to impact infrastructure by giving to perhaps a think tank looking at major educational issues? As soon as they realize how broad a canvas they have to explore, that's when people get excited. That's when they realize it really is fun and heartwarming and can make wonderful sense as part of their overall financial plan.
I agree completely with Renata, but in a lot of cases, there needs to be a catalyst to provide that canvas and that paint and that brush and so on. And what we need, Roe, is more proactive advisors that don't impede or restrict, but they assist that that effort. And there's a big difference between what Renata was talking about and a testamentary bequest that comes at death, and I kind of fulfilled my imposed obligation, if you will. Okay, I satisfied this by 5% my will, or $5,000 or $10,000 in a dollar form. But this lifetime giving is very, very important, and Roe said it well. The light bulb goes on, and they get an incredible joy out of this. And I hate to throw in baby boomer at this point, but we have a lot of people who have years and years of life ahead of them, and they're looking at the 20, 25, 30 years and more and saying, I can get more out of life by giving back and doing good. It's a great revelation for a lot of people.
I think a lot of people also really do not appreciate the financial advantages there might be to charitable giving. Probably one of the worst situations I've ever encountered is a young man came to me. He was 23 years old. He was referred to me by a stockbroker who was acquainted with him. And this young man had started a .com. And unlike the ones that went bust, this one went to IPO, and this 23-year-old was fabulously wealthy. And he called me, and he said, yeah, I decided I want to do something charitable, so I cashed out $1 million worth of my stock, so I have $1 million to do something with. What should I do? I'm like, cut your throat. You should, you know, who's your financial planner? There was not even a hint of knowledge that by donating appreciated stock, you have no capital gains. You have the full value of the appreciated stock to use as a charitable deduction. And this young man just had no clue that he could have saved himself an awful lot of money as well as do an equal amount of good.
Well intended.
Hey, Bob, let me throw this one to you, because here's sometimes an impediment. An older couple or individual, he says, well, what I'm really worried about is my retirement income. So if I give money away, in their mind, they're thinking, if I give it away, I lose that. How can we structure that in a plan to be able to help retirement as well?
Roe, that's the core issue in my mind that we face a number of times weekly. What we hear so often is, well, Bob, I would like to do more if I could. And two, I would like to do more if I knew how. And that first part, I would like to do more if I could, really relates to your question. It is, will I outlive my money? What happens if I or my spouse, both of us, go into and need long-term care? Well, what about my heirs? You know, so it's a combination of things that I have in my mind that really are hurdles that, when you break it down, we talk about longevity risk, and that's living too long, outliving our money. But if you look at the other side of longevity, we're living longer, and I've got a quick example for you, Roe. I don't know if we have time, but
yeah, go ahead, give it a shot.
I had a young lady here 2 years ago referred to me by our firm, referred by an attorney, and her husband died unexpectedly on a golf course, ironically, but 59 years old, and she wanted to start a foundation in his name and his family's name But she said, Bob, I'm afraid I don't have enough money, and would $25,000 be a good memorial? Now, here's a well-intended, lovely, lovely woman that really wants and obviously misses her husband. But what we showed her was a technique of taking advantage of her longevity. She is from Longines. Her mother just died here a few years ago at 94. Father died at 80-something, and we have to look at her life expectancy, in fact, 2 to 4 years beyond that. If she sets aside what her tax contribution is each year and 1% of her net worth every year, she'll have $1 million by the time she retires.
That's
by the time she dies.
There you go. And now she can make a significant contribution.
Yes, very much so.
Wonderful. Hey, we're going to take another break, but we will be back to talk about philanthropy with two of the greats in the philanthropic arena. So stay tuned. We'll be back with more Three Dimensional Wealth.
More and more people are starting their day with informative, focused business talk. Top experts. Today's business issues. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
As a financial planner, do your clients really read all that computer-generated boilerplate text in an analysis? The FPS Financial Planning Software is designed for you to show your clients a concise and easy-to-follow report of their financial needs. The FPS system guides your clients to clearly see any needs that they may have in the achieving of their goals. Clients are guided to a decision rather than just reading the analysis. For a free copy of the FPS system, call 1-800-245-1991. Once again, that's 1-800-245-1991.
Now, Mrs. Johnson, before we close on your mortgage loan, I want to make sure you remember Mike.
Hi. You can trust me. I'm African-American, just like you.
So, here's the low monthly payments and interest rates we promised, and here's where they triple.
The rest of this stuff is just here to make sure that we get your house when you can't pay us back.
What a lovely house.
Predatory lenders are never this easy to spot. Call us at 866-222-FAIR and protect yourself with the facts. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Fair Housing Alliance and the Ad Council.
Are you feeling slammed and suckered in today's stock market? If so, then you need to tune in to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Jordan Kimmel will train you in what you can do to beat up the big boys on Wall Street, as well as share his secrets to success so that you can buy and sell like a profit-pumping pro. Grab the bull market by the horns and listen to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk. Voice America Business.
Are you looking for a unique perspective on today's market from an experienced economist? Well, look no further. Listen to The Economic Contrarian with host Mike Norman every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time on Business America Radio. Mike and his guests will discuss new trends in the marketplace, as well as emerging companies and opportunities. So if you want in-depth analysis from a contrarian point of view, don't miss The Economic Contrarian Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
The Bottom Line in Business Talk. Voice America Business.
We now return to Three Dimensional Wealth with Roy Diefendorf. Direct your questions and comments to www.diefendorfcapital.com or call 516-759-3900. Now the host of Three Dimensional Wealth, Roy Diefendorf.
Welcome back. My guests for today are Renata Rafferty and Bob Thompson, and we're discussing philanthropy. And one of the things just before our break, we were talking about a lot of tools that are available. Again, in this Wall Street Journal article of last week, there were many, many things. Donor advised fund, private foundations, supporting organizations, donor managed investment accounts, charitable remainder trust, charitable lead trust, charitable gift trust, pooled and income trust, on and on. Bob, you made a comment along the way that that's stuff. I mean, that's important, but what's the 90% that really is important in what we're doing?
Well, in everything that we do, and I refer back to that bias that I can't imagine why anyone who's eligible to do these things, why they don't. So I kind of make the person that says they're not philanthropic, I kind of make them the exception rather than the other way around, where an advisor will say, none of my clients are philanthropic. So when we look at these various tools, we talk about tax savings and everything, but the real core of this, ROE, is a philanthropic intent. So the advisor at some point in time, the attorney, the planner, the accountant or trust officer or whatever, has to identify that there's a core philanthropic intent there. And once that's there, and I personally think it's almost in everybody, whether they express it or not, we've got to dig that out of them and really get to what helped them during their lifetime. Was it the YMCA when they were 10 years old, or was it the Girl Scouts that really matured them a certain way? But how does the government give us all of these benefits tax-wise? We get that question a lot, and it really came out of a U.S. Congress Act back in 1969, and until a few years ago, it was the longest unchanged, unamended tax law that we had in the books, virtually unchanged. Well, that 69 Act, called Section 664, enabled you and me, everybody, to take advantage of some of these tools. And a lot of them are what we call split interest vehicles. And we'll get into that in a second. But this act created a lot of those tools.
Mm-hmm. Just step that out a little further. Then split interest, what do you mean by that?
Well, split interest is bifurcated, if you will. There are two sides of it.
Okay.
One is I'm in these tools, I get a lifetime income, if you will. I get a current or a deferred life benefit out of this during my life and the life of my wife, my spouse. And the second part of it is, the other part of the split, the second part is that at the death of the income survivor or the income beneficiary, those monies will go to a charity. And that charity can be in the form of a 501c3 charity that you and I see every day, or it could even be a family foundation project. So there's a lot of flexibility in the remainder interest, which is part two of that split interest.
Mm-hmm. While I'm speaking, maybe you guys can think about a sample case, but I'll tell you one that I was brought into. I think it was terrific because it was an older couple, and the attorney brought me in, the estate planning attorney, and they never had children. And so as I visited with them, and we determined that they had just over the years been great savers. In fact, had put together quite a large estate. And when we determined what was their real passion, one of them was that, you know, education was important. In this particular situation, they wanted to do some scholarship funding for a Christian educational institution. And we were able to put together exactly what you said, a retirement income tool where we put in appreciated stock. That stock was sold. We then developed a portfolio. They had one. Now one of the spouses is deceased, and so he continues to get income, in fact, quarterly income. His income has actually increased. Now he's in a nursing home, so the need is gone up. But at his death, this educational institution will have enough in funds to provide 10 full scholarships on in perpetuity. And so they will continue to go and provide education. And so here they were. They were so thrilled that they could do something like this. They had no idea that this kind of thing would even be available because they just saw themselves as common working people and didn't know that they could really make a difference.
The catalyst was the attorney and the good advisor.
Excuse me?
I say the catalyst was the attorney that referred you them to you and a good advisor that showed them what they could do.
The other benefit to some of those kinds of instruments is that if the individual or the couple is motivated by also wanting to get some credit from the charity for what they've done, making a gift of that nature allows you to have the benefit of whatever that level of donor at that institution is provided. Mm-hmm. So you can actually, for those individuals who want to get some of the applause also for what they've done while they're still alive, that's absolutely possible with these kinds of instruments.
It was interesting that this couple wanted no applause at all. They said, this is all that we're happy with, and very low profile. And so
we have several of those also, Roy.
Mm-hmm. How about the planner? I mean, is there special software you need? You know, what is it that has to be done differently than someone that is not really involved in philanthropic planning?
Well, there are a number of software packages out there. We've used three of them over the years. We use one for our own number crunching and for our internal staff to evaluate and see if it really is worthwhile for everybody, if it's a win-win situation. But another piece of software that we use is more for the client. There are graphics. It's visual. Simplifies the legal verbiage, if you will. But we've used over the years Philanthrotech,
mm-hmm.
and we also use PG Calc. And on a more elementary basis or what have you, Number Cruncher and Ketley and some of these others do a very good job in both the visual and the technical side of it.
Now on the what's traditionally called the softer side of it, which is once you have the plan set up and the instruments selected, that whole area of now what do you want to accomplish with your philanthropic giving, that's a rather personal process. It's something that I believe strongly requires an individual involved in the process, almost like, I hate to use the word, but a therapist,
mm-hmm.
or someone who can really elicit responses that go beyond just the surface and can also hear what someone is really saying, even if it's not the words. There isn't really a good piece of software or something to do that. When I wrote my book, Don't Just Give It Away, How to Make the Most of Your Charitable Giving, it was to provide some tool that an advisor or financial planner could use with their client on those softer questions, or could hand to their client and say, think about this and let's talk about it once you've had a chance to go through perhaps some of the simple questions and exercises that are there.
Is there software, Renata, that you use in terms of screening different charities as you're looking at them? How do you come down to your finalist list?
I'll tell you, it really depends on the size and the nature of the charity. But I can tell you that if someone is looking at making any kind of a gift, five figures or above, there is going to be involved an interview of board members. And there's probably going to be a review of board minutes, as well as looking at financials, as well as probably a site visit and speaking to some of the clients of that charity. But it will be far beyond just the financial numbers.
Interesting. Anything you do in that respect, Bob, in your practice?
Yes, I go to Renata.
she's my guru.
Oh, that's too easy. No, she's my guru and my future ghostwriter and publicist.
All right. Well, I hear the music fading in right now, so we're going to take one more break, but we will be back for our closing session as we talk about philanthropy on Three Dimensional Wealth, so stay tuned.
Fresh, dynamic, and totally prepared for continuing business education. Business Talk Radio. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
Financial planning can be confusing and complex, and unless you have a solid game plan, you could be taking unnecessary risks and missing out on tremendous opportunities. Let Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates take the mystery out of investing and help you build a solid financial foundation for years to come. Diefendorf Capital Planning revolves around the family, and through our financial service companies and three-dimensional wealth centers, we strive to deliver total wealth management financially, personally, and socially. Learn more about what Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates can do for you. Visit the website at diefendorfcapital.com today. Integrity, full service, best in class, diefendorfcapital.com.
You hear business show after business show all geared towards improving a company's bottom line. But what about your bottom line? How come no one ever talks about that? Finally, a show dedicated to the worker, The Crow Show with Paul McLaughlin, The Work Wonk. Heard every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, The Crow Show is aimed specifically at the worker and their environment. From work skills and technology to dealing with bosses and coworkers, The Crow Show will give you insight on how to survive and prosper in today's workplace. The Crow Show with Paul McLaughlin, The Work Wonk. Heard every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line of Business Talk, BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Attention shoppers, if anyone is missing a rather plump set of love handles, please come to the customer service counter and claim them. The ample love handles were lost in the produce department where their former owner had purchased fruits and veggies to munch on during the big game. Thank you and have a good day.
Small step number 81, snack on fruits and veggies. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to get healthy. Learn more at www.smallstep.gov.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is Voice America Business.
Bringing you the keys to total wealth management, this is Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roe Diefendorf. Comments or questions? Visit www.diefendorfcapital.com or call 516-759-3900. Now back to the show. Here's Roe Diefendorf.
Our show for today is entitled Philanthropy, More Than Giving. And in this last section, I'd like to focus our attention on family foundations if we can. And I'm going to refer back to this Wall Street Article Journal from last week, because what it says is that, like Mr. Buffett, many parents also involve their children in their charitable plans, using philanthropy as a tool to teach their kids about how to manage family wealth, as well as instill values such as generosity. And I think a family foundation is a wonderful way to do that. And I know that the two of you are doing precisely that and actively involved. So maybe if each of you will comment on some of the things that you think are key and levels of participation these days.
I would say that we're seeing that more and more today among the baby boomer generation, this sense of I want my children to understand generosity and philanthropy. And what we recommend is that people start introducing those concepts at the absolute earliest stage, 3, 4, 5 years old, making children aware that there are needs in the world, inviting the child to participate in acts of giving. And when it gets more formalized, if you do have a family foundation, we encourage even the grandchildren as young as 8, 9, 10, to have a particular role within the foundation. In some places we've set up a youth committee where the children get a certain small amount of money to grant each year, and they have to perform the due diligence and consider the grant applications and have the decisions. But it's not something you can start teaching to somebody when they're 21 years old. It's got to start when they're young.
Absolutely.
Interesting. We have the Three-Dimensional Wealth coloring book, and we have the Three-Dimensional Wealth piggy bank. And so we use that with our clients, and, of course, it's not like any piggy bank. It's got three slots. It says, you know, give, save, and spend. And so we want them to develop the pattern of, you know, what it really takes to be what I call significant, not just financially successful. And so we're doing that. What do you see, Bob, in your practice, family foundations?
Well, two sides to that, Roe. One on the client side, We've gotten involved over the last 6 or 7 years in 11 foundations, and we're having a lot of activity there. But just like the split interest charitable remainder trust I referred to, it wasn't until my wife and I started our charitable remainder trust in 1989 that I could really communicate effectively or more effectively with clients. The same is true with the family foundation. We started a foundation project here about 3 years ago, changed the remainder beneficiary of our CRT over to the Family Foundation, and we started running with that. Since then, I'm talking about both, talking about what we're doing and why we're doing it, how we're doing it, and they see how we're motivated and what joy we're getting out of it. On the other side, personally, with grandchildren, we mentioned offline there, firm called Foundation Source that mm-hmm. does administration, and they're very accommodating, very, very good people, quality staff that's helped us a great deal. Well, they sent out here about a year or two ago, I don't know if you saw it, Roey, but the gifting game.
Sure.
And I got this little package, and I thought, oh, my goodness, you know, I've got to try this myself before I'm going to recommend it to one of our clients or a family retreat or whatever. So I invited our three oldest grandchildren, 9, 10, and 13, and we had lunch with Papa. And Papa put $100 in $1 bills on the table, embarrassed the kids when the waitress came by. But we had $300 in a stack of bills, and I said, okay, here's the project. I want you, from now until Thanksgiving, to pick out three charities that you think would be good, and I want you to do some research. And these kids, by the way, even at 9 and 10, they get on the computer, and they're starting to dig around and so on. Well, they had projects already in mind. Well, part of the concept that we thought in that Foundation Source gifting game was to skip the middle generation. So we didn't talk to, my wife and I didn't talk to our daughter and son-in-law, two of them actually, two families, but we've got this middle generation involved now so that we're into the second year, and it's just broadening, it's just blossoming, and I got to throw this in, I apologize. But one of the motivating factors for at least two of the two granddaughters, was that I invited, or I told them I would invite them to be on my local cable TV show. So they got all excited about it. So I'm not sure if Peter, but the two girls were excited about it. But they are involved. They're talking about who they would give to. We had the unfortunate situation of a young lady killed in an automobile accident, left two or three young children. And one of the children was in one of our kids' class, elementary school, and they had decided that one of these $100 would go to that family, which I was impressed with.
I think the bottom line, I love to quote John D. Rockefeller. He said, giving should be entered into in the same careful way as investing, because giving is investing.
Mm-hmm.
And to the extent that we work so hard to try to educate our children about finances and about money and about investing, we should approach our education of them about philanthropy just as seriously. Because what you're doing is you're investing funds in order to make change in the world.
Investing in their lives, yep.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I think is that someday, I mean, they're going to be sitting at the head of the table running that family foundation, if you will. And there's no better time, like you talk about, Bob, is when they're younger to know what that's about. And in fact, I find in the investment advisory side that at, you know, at the ages of 13, 14, 15, you know, they can learn concepts of asset allocation.
Yep.
And they can understand, you know, what's going on and learn something about money in the process. And you really can't get in too much trouble, you know, as long as you stay within the, you know, the investment policy statement or your philanthropic mission statement. And they start to learn those concepts early on. Later on, you know, I've had clients that say, well, Roy, when I make it, see, then I'll give it away. And, of course, you know what happens is when they finally have enough resources that they're, quote, financially independent, you know, they end up growing short arms and deep pockets. And they can't get there, you see.
Yeah.
And I find that, and unless you start that pattern early on, and even with savings, if you don't develop patterns of savings and thrift when the kids are small, you know, when it comes time to put their money in their 401k plan and they're 25, 6, 7, they don't do it.
They wait.
And if you don't have that same kind of, you know, thing about, you know, giving, it's that pattern that you're developing, and I find that those families who have done that early on, that next generation coming up, has, you know, they're outwardly focused, they're much more joy in what's going on in their lives, and I think they're much healthier.
So I agree. I see that, and ironically, if small business succession would incorporate some of this philanthropic, the ideas that we're talking about, there would be more businesses survive beyond that second generation.
I will just say one thing, and I don't know if you knew that what we're doing, but actually in three-dimensional wealth, we have a curriculum, online, on-demand curriculum for advisors, and we've got courses that are counseling courses through life's transitions, and so we'll go through conflict mediation and stress and career building, death, dying, and bereavement. And so we've got a number of them that have been put together by a family systems therapist. And then we go on and we talk about philanthropic mission statements and family mission statements and, you know, how to perpetuate and preserve and capture your personal wealth. And so they're really, I think, some pretty good tools that should help advisors. Because as you said in the beginning, I think Renata said it, is we need to have more advisors who can think beyond just, you know, how do I get 20 more basis points on the investments for my
right.
clients? Because
right.
if that's the answer, you know, help me out.
Exactly.
right.
Any final comments as we get closing towards the end here, Renata? Would you anything that you'd like to say that you haven't had a chance to say?
I think probably one thing that I'll very quickly mention is we have had a lot of disasters, unfortunately, happen in the world the last few years. And so there have been massive appeals for donations when we've had, say, a tsunami or a Katrina or a 9/11. And we've had some problems with that on the receiving end. And so what I would suggest is when a disaster happens and you want to give, stop and think about it for a moment. Continue to make the right choice to the right charity for the right reason and not just react emotionally. Bottom line, your giving should always be proactive. Make your choices and decisions first about what you want to accomplish, then decide where the money is going to go to do that, rather than waiting and responding simply to asks, whether it's a neighbor, the Red Cross, or your former university.
Renata Rafferty, thank you. Bob, any final comments just before we wind up?
Well, I'll go back to my guru and say, you know, investing what we do and what we give and that type of thing, we're really investing with our philanthropy in the community, in the country, and the globe. It's a great investment.
Bob Thompson, thank you very much. Renata Rafferty, I really appreciate you joining me this hour.
Thank you for having us,
talking about philanthropy. You two are probably the best specialists in the country, so thanks again for being with me.
Thanks for having us.
Thank
you. I want to thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed our conversation, and I invite you to join me next week at the same time with more of Three-Dimensional Wealth. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Rory Diefendorf. Please join us again next Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time for more tips and strategies for achieving total wealth management on Three-Dimensional Wealth right here on The Bottom Line in Business Talk.